Chapter 6, 161. The incident with Lorgar left Corferon's patience worn thin, and knowing his own nature, the preacher secluded himself in his dorm through rest eve until the next astromantic observations were required at the break of wake rise on high night. He sat on his cot and stared out at the dark desert, waiting for the powers to pull the thickest veil of night over the skies. The temperature had dropped rapidly as the heat of the day faded through coldfall. Here, at one of the highest points of the Vandergeer desolation, snow was more common than rain, but it was not yet the season for such bounty from the powers. The high night winds had not yet started, but it would not be long before they brought their chilling touch. Near cloudless, the air would not trap the heat of the day, and well before the close of wake rise, the thermometer would be close to freezing. Through the caravan, the slaves were making ready for the cold, lighting fireboxes and dragging out the solar collectors that had been storing the sun's energy since dawn on Maunday. Parasols that had shielded them from the deadly sun were now reversed, their reflective sides turned inwards to trap as much escaping heat as possible. The paradox seemed appropriate. Corferon took up the fitfully glowing screen of an autoscriber and pressed his thumb to the relic's activation rune.
"We must forever desire the gaze of the powers," he said, clearly, slowly, so that the diction device could catch each word precisely.
A spool of transpex parchment slid out of the end, his words neatly burned onto the surface in a flowing script. The effort of restraining his racing thoughts was a good discipline, helping him shape his philosophy even as he gave voice to it.
"That they have abandoned Colchis is no mystery to me. When the Covenant spews mindless rote into the Empyrean, devoid of faith and passion. But to draw the eye of the powers is to be laid bare to their scrutiny. A testing will come when we are beset by that immortal gaze once more. Those who hold true to their faith will pass. Those who show weakness of resolve will fail. It is not for mortals to judge, but to bring forth the gaze of the powers and allow their judgment to run its course. When the testing is complete, those who remain shall live beneath the invigorating and protective gaze of the powers once more."
As he considered these words, Corferon felt his anger ebbing. He remembered the truth that unto each would be given the tasks set to them by the powers, according to their design. Into him the powers had invested knowledge of the truth and the strength to be the bearer of the word, the seer among the blind, the listener in a crowd of the deaf, the speaker in a world of mutes. They had entrusted that duty to no other. But it was so taxing, bearing the responsibility of so many souls. 162. Three knocks at the door announced the arrival of a visitor. Axata, Corferon believed, knowing well the force and pace of his chief convert's request for entry.
"Come in."
It was indeed the guard captain, his bulk suddenly filling the cabin.
"Sentries posted, patrol sent out, master."
Corferon silently nodded his acceptance of the report. He detected a slight awkwardness about his lieutenant's demeanour, and his presence was a change from the norm.
"Why do you report in person, Axata? Normally it is sufficient to send word with an underling."
The giant twisted his hands around the knot of the rope belt that held his acolyte's robe over the plate and mail armour beneath.
"The boy."
"What of Lorgar?"
"He is not normal." "You said so yourself, master."
"I did."
"Why is he here?"
Corferon considered dismissing the question, but he could see that the matter would nag at the captain, and through him would infect the thoughts of the other converts. He almost delivered a throwaway platitude to assure Axata that the powers had a plan and that they were all a part of it, whether the divine scheme could be seen or not. He stopped himself, knowing that it would be an affront to the truth. It would be no admission of weakness to share his concerns, and would strengthen Axata's loyalty to think he had been taken into his master's confidences.
I think his purpose is not for us to divine, but to define Axata. See how eager he is to learn? He is a mould into which we must pour our faith and our wisdom to create something beautiful and holy.
Axata nodded slowly and scratched broken nails across his stubbled chin. He narrowed his eyes.
But what purpose do you have for him? You teach him like an acolyte, but beat him like a slave.
There is greatness in Lorgar. That is plain to see. It must be founded upon humility, if it is to be of worth to the powers. We must put it foremost in his mind that he serves the design of the powers, not any mortal ambition.
Again, Axata showed his understanding, but betrayed further thought with his disturbed expression.
And what does it mean for us, in particular?
For us?
Corferon chose his next words with care.
An ending and a beginning, Axata. Lorgar is a sign from the powers that they have noted our labours. Our exile will end. Our time in the wilderness, both literal and figurative, shall one day cease. Lorgar is the key to that future.
You intend to destroy the Covenant.
I like your quick wit, Axata. That is why you are my right hand, but in this you are wrong. The Covenant is the Church of Colchis, the rightful institution of the powers. The Covenant is more than the priests and priestesses, the choruses and choirs, the temples and cloisters. The Covenant must endure, but to do so it must also be changed. We shall be that change, Axata. You and I and the others of the true passion. Lorgar has been delivered to us for that end. If you wish to know his purpose, look no further than the walls and spires of Varadesh. Praise the powers.
Praise the prophets, replied Axata.
Heartened by these words, he left Corferon, who was also invigorated by the exchange. The truth was simple, and Corferon chided himself for not seeing it earlier. Lorgar's arrival was not a test. It was an opportunity.